Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, I got an hour show for you today. No breaks though. Rounding the corner on the renovation of the studio, it's starting to look like an actual studio. I'm excited for it. So I got a bunch of stuff to do. It's actually hour-long shows the rest of the week. But again, fear not. There's no breaks, and you'll still get roughly the same amount of stories. Just me going slightly faster. But let me give you a quick little rundown of what you have to look forward to today. The Clinton Foundation, SpaghettiOs, caught. More allegations, not just allegations, more just evidence of pay-to-play, and, you know, they're still dodging. It's so sad to watch Democratic partisans try to pretend like there wasn't tricky stuff going on behind the scenes with this, so I'm going to explain to you what's going on here. And it's actually weird, you know, I still get tweets to this day, some people saying, I don't get it, like, why is the Clinton Foundation a bad thing? Don't they do charity? So I'll get super basic today, and I'll just explain exactly what the issue is here, but I'll also give you all the evidence, the new evidence, about who Hillary Clinton met with as Secretary of State, because it's incredibly telling. We also have James Carville. He's a Democratic insider most of his career, and he's going to go on Morning Joe here and make an ass of himself, criticizing people like myself who are critics of the Clinton Foundation. And then later on in the show, Carly Fiorina somehow makes her way into the show. Bill Nye, School, CNN. And hopefully we have time for it, but Alex Jones. Alex Jones and his cronies had the saddest conversation I've ever heard in my life. I mean, they took their fear-mongering over the Illuminati, put it into overdrive, and all of a sudden, they got so conspiratorial that they turned religious. it was conspiracy theory on steroids and human growth hormone, and next thing you know, you come out the other end, and you're all of a sudden basically like Pat Robertson. We'll talk about that and much more. Let's get started here, and we're going to do that with the Clinton Foundation. Here we go again. The Associated Press has more revelations about a pay-to-play scandal involving the Clinton Foundation. They report more than half the people outside the government who met with Hillary Clinton while she was Secretary of State gave money, either personally or through companies or groups, to the Clinton Foundation. At least 85 of 154 people from private interests who met or had phone conversations scheduled with Clinton while she led the State Department donated to her family charity or pledged commitments to its international programs. Combined, the 85 donors contributed as much as $156 million. At least 40 donated more than $100,000 each, and 20 gave more than $1 million each. Donors who were granted time with Clinton included an internationally known economist who asked for her help as the Bangladesh government pressured him to resign from a nonprofit bank he ran, and a Wall Street executive who sought Clinton's help with a visa problem. The 154 did not include U.S. federal employees or foreign government representatives. Clinton met with representatives of at least 16 foreign governments that donated as much as $170 million to the Clinton charity, but they were not included in AP's calculations because such meetings would presumably have been part of her diplomatic duties. Yeah, AP is way more kind to her than I would be because of other evidence that I've seen and we've covered on the show. So, for example, you have Bill Clinton going to Saudi, giving a speech there, and then look at that, all of a sudden, the weapons deal, which had been stalled, was approved by Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. So for those of you who don't get it and need me to explain it in an even clearer way, Saudi Arabia gives the Clinton Foundation money, then Hillary Clinton says, okay, I will now approve the weapons deal because you gave the Clinton Foundation money. And now they're describing, well, that happened with, what did they say here, 16? I'm looking for the number, Yes. So they say here that happened with 16 different people in government. And believe you me, they got favors, and we know about many of the favors they got. And they even have specific examples of favors that were sought. So, for example, when they say here, this internationally known economist who asked for her help as the Bangladesh government pressured him to resign from a nonprofit bank, they're actually talking about microloans there. So there's this big program set up to give very poor people microloans. Well, come to find out, after you do some investigative reporting on it, it basically turns out to be a scam. And, you know, they charge them exorbitant interest rates and they can't pay it back, and it ends up ruining so many people's lives. And it's put forward as, oh, this is just to help people. But then at the end of the day, it's actually for, you know, the accumulation of power of a small group of people at the top. And this economist was apparently part of that. And so when the Bangladeshi government starts pressuring this guy, well, look, you didn't help anybody here. She goes, okay, now I got to go to Mommy Clinton and have her help me because she's Secretary of State and she can flex a muscle and try to keep me in my position. They say the Wall Street executive who wanted Clinton's help with the visa problem. So all these different governmental issues where they're looking for favors and they're looking for favors and they can get them because they contributed to the Clinton Foundation, this is exactly what pay-to-play is. This is exactly what people were concerned about from the beginning. And now it's been shown that indeed is exactly what happened. These aren't the only examples of it. Obviously, there are more examples of it. And it shouldn't, like, for people who are shocked by it, I think, how naive are you? And so I get a lot of tweets of people saying, well, okay, the Clinton Foundation, they did a lot of charity, so I don't understand what the problem is. The problem is it's the incentive issue. So, for example, when you have, like, when Hillary Clinton gave speeches on Wall Street and she went to Goldman Sachs and they gave her, you know, I believe it was $600,000 or so for two speeches. People say, what do you mean? She's an expert on these different political issues and they want her opinion, so that's why they're giving her the money, right? No, again, don't be naive. They're giving her that money because if/when she gets back into power, then it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. I gave you the money when you were doing the speaking tour, so now you're going to take my phone call, and guess what? Whatever thing we want you to do, so for example, if there's a new subsidy for them, a corporate welfare check, a special tax break, some legislation for them to keep their money in offshore tax havens, whatever the case is, you know, you're going to have Hillary Clinton fighting for Goldman Sachs, fighting for Wall Street. This is, you know, the kind of insider corruption and legalized bribery that Bernie Sanders was ripping endlessly. Well, with the Clinton Foundation, you basically have that on steroids because it's not just the traditional avenues of legalized bribery that they go through, where it's campaign contributions, or in Hillary's case, it's even when she wasn't in office and she was doing, you know, the speaking circuit and making money that way. This is also now, at this point, not super PACs, not campaigns, not money directly into my pocket, but you have a foundation, and the foundation does charity work, but it raises all its money from super rich and well-connected people, and then guess what? When you're in power, they are going to call you. Now, think about it. If these people really cared so deeply about charity, it's not like the fucking Prince of Bahrain who donated and asked for favors, and it's not like, you know, people inside the government of Saudi Arabia who donated and asked for favors. It's not like there aren't other charities that they could give to, but they chose to give to Hillary and the Clinton Foundation. Why? Because they want something in return. Again, don't be naive. And furthermore, is that really going to be the claim of the Democratic loyalists? Is, no, it's just about charity, bro. It's just about charity. Really? So all of a sudden, Saudi Arabia, for example, who behead people for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling, and they say all atheists are terrorists. All of a sudden, this government now is so concerned about human rights and charity that they give so much money, millions of dollars, to the Clinton Foundation to help people's lives around the world. You know that's not what it's about. In no way, shape, or form is that what it's about. So this is the problem with Hillary Clinton. She is the ultimate insider. So again, you have other politicians. Don't get me wrong. I'm not, like, going after her and exonerating the Republicans for their corruption. They're as corrupt as it gets. They're 100% corrupt. The Republicans, on average, are more corrupt than the Democrats. But Hillary Clinton is a special case of corruption because, again, she has all the traditional avenues, so super PACs, campaign spending, when she was out of office just doing speaking gigs. She has all that plus her foundation. So, and I'm not trying to belittle the good that the foundation does, but what I am saying is you cannot be naive about exactly what happens when somebody gives a big contribution. And now we know they're going to take your phone call. They're going to meet with you if you contributed to the Clinton Foundation. And guys, we can't have that. The whole point of the government is it's supposed to represent the people of the United States of America. This is the point of a constitutional republic and a representative democracy. So constitutional issues are off the table. They're set in stone. It is what it is, and we defend that. But then everything else that's not a constitutional issue, yeah, it's a representative democracy. So the leaders, the elected officials, are supposed to represent the people. Well, it's Hillary Clinton's not going to represent you when she's getting all this money from these, you know, foreign governments and from business leaders. That really sets up a bad incentive. Now, this week they came out and said, oh, but it's okay because if we get elected, if I become president, well, then I'm not going to accept money from foreign governments anymore. Okay, whatever incentive problem there would be when you're in office also exists when you're running for office. So you're taking the money now. It's not like, oh, well, thankfully, when she's in office, she'll stop taking it, so it's cool. No, everybody will just pile on before she gets into office and give her more money and then get the favors later on. But not just that. If implicit in saying I won't do it anymore is admitting, well, yeah, I guess there's a problem here with incentive, with foreign governments trying to control us and get us to do favors for them. Well, that problem also exists for corporations and wealthy donors within the U.S., but they're not even entertaining that conversation. I'm like, well, maybe we should stop taking that too. So it's just so in our faces, and I can't take it, that we have the choice of a fascist, thin-skinned, over-the-top buffoon in Donald Trump who really doesn't know anything. I mean, the guy didn't know the difference between Hamas and Hezbollah. He didn't know the difference between the Kurds and the Quds Force. He's a man-child who wants to lead the world. You can't have that guy win. But I also can't have the ultimate insider win because you're not – she's not even putting on the show of like, okay, I'm going to look out for you. Like Obama. Obama is, at the end of the day, an establishment insider, but he threw a bone to the people every once in a while. And in, certainly in 08 when he ran, you thought he'll look out for us. With Hillary, it's just like that's what they offered. Remember that? When, oh, why did you take all this money from Goldman Sachs? That's what they offered. So hope and change has been changed to – you know, insider and corrupt. And she's like, yeah, okay, but what are you going to do, go for the other guy? He's fucking crazy and you know it. So we're caught between a rock and a hard place, and it's terrible to read these stories day in and day out about just how far gone our government is, and that basically the people that Hillary Clinton is going to meet with are just the people, or overwhelmingly the people, who donated to her foundation, and yes, they're getting favors, and yes, oftentimes, their favors are in conflict with the will of the people, and that's a gigantic problem. It's a systemic issue, and we need to fight to change it. Next. Okay. James Carville has been a Democratic insider most of his career, so he's going to go on Morning Joe here and make an ass of himself, criticizing those who aren't very happy about the Clinton Foundation.
Yeah, the bad would be you would be out hundreds of millions of dollars that are doing good. What the Clinton Foundation does, it takes money from rich people and gives it to poor people.
But should they?
Most people think that's a pretty good idea.
Should they have done that from the beginning, though? We're not going to take foreign money.
If you ask me, as a political advisor, of course. If you ask me as a human being, I'm not too sure. As a human being, I think your money does an enormous amount of good.
Not
from a strictly political standpoint, yeah, if my sixth grade teacher, Brother Robert, who was assistant to St. Joseph Wright, somebody's going to hell over this.
What?
Because somebody, and I'm saying here, or somewhere, this is saving people's lives. And there's nothing, and I think,
I wish I could say what the word I want to say. I'll just say that's BS. You know, the fact is, if it's a great charity and it's a 5-star rated charity, guess what? Other people can raise the money. It doesn't have to be Bill Clinton calling somebody up, making them think, well, you know what? If I give him money, it could help me out. If it's a great charity, it can stand on its own, and other people can raise money for it. It's not a zero-sum game. It's not having Bill Clinton raise money while his wife's running for president, or else we're all going to hell and little kids are going to die across the planet.
They've got him.
Did you catch it at the end? Joe Scarborough is explaining. Like, no, you're wrong. It's not like the kids are going to die. Oh, the Clinton Foundation, if they're not doing it, the kids. It's not like the kids are directly going to die after that. He's like, they're going to. You know it's a bad situation when Joe Scarborough comes across as the liberal in the conversation. And that's what just happened. That's embarrassing. You know, these Democratic loyalists have been getting under my skin as much as Republicans get under my skin recently. Because they're just turning themselves into contortionists. And they're doing mental gymnastics to try to deflect and make sure that no criticism of Hillary Clinton is taken seriously. But they're delegitimizing everything they've ever said and everything they believe in the process of doing that. Because you can be in favor of somebody and say, okay, they're wrong about X, Y, and Z, but a lot of people are just refusing to say she's wrong about anything. And now we're at the point where people like James Carville are trying to pretend like you're going to hell if you criticize the Clinton Foundation. As if the people criticizing the Clinton Foundation are saying, you know, I would like to stop having charity given to kids in third world countries. That's what I'm in favor of. You know that's not what they're arguing. You know that's a gigantic, disgusting straw man. So what are these people actually saying? Well, they're saying, like we just covered in the AP story, they're saying, hold on now, if you have rich people in foreign governments, if you have wealthy donors here in the U.S., if you have major multinational corporations giving money to the Clinton Foundation, what do you think is going to happen? Do you think we're naive? Do you think we're stupid? Well, obviously these people, they might give Hillary Clinton a call when she's president and say, you know, remember that time I gave you that money? Well, how about, you know, you hook a brother up and give me, I don't know, an extension on my offshore tax haven money where I can leave it there and not bring it back and the government cannot collect the tax revenue, or you give me a subsidy, a corporate welfare check, or you give me a new special tax break, or you help me out in a variety of different ways. You know, if it's a defense contractor, how about you give me another weapons deal and we build more tanks and do this and do that? So all these things are the problem. That's the problem. The problem is it's pay to play. The problem is the government has limited resources, and if you're doing all these favors for all these foreign governments and all these multinational corporations and all these wealthy donors, when the fuck do you get around to doing something for the American people who you say you're in there to represent? You don't get around to it. That's the point. That's why people are angry about the Clinton Foundation. I mean, we already have enough of a problem with money in politics if they didn't have this foundation. So they accept money through their super PAC. Okay, well, there you have some conflicts of interest and an incentive problem. They accept money for their campaign. Again, conflicts of interest, incentive problem. Hillary Clinton accepted money when she wasn't in office and she was just doing the speaking circuit. She was setting up her presidential run and taking money like the money from Goldman Sachs, and it's I scratch your back, you scratch mine. Again, incentive problem. So we already have those issues, and they're bad enough on their own. It gets way worse when you add in your foundation, where, again, you're taking money, Saudi Arabia, for example, Bahrain. I mean, we covered the story. It was the International Business Times that did the initial report. They found that Saudi Arabia gave money to Bill Clinton for speaking gigs, and then all of a sudden, same time, Hillary Clinton approves the fucking weapons deals that go to Saudi Arabia. I mean, there are instances of Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, giving a child soldier exemption to South Sudan. I wonder if money is behind that. I wonder if it's either the government of South Sudan or perhaps some weapons manufacturers who lobbied her by giving her money either directly or through the foundation to say, hey, help me out here. You know, don't say we're human rights violators, even though we have child soldiers. This is the problem, man. This is the fucking problem. But James Carville, Democratic loyalist, puts his head up his own ass to try to play defense and say the Democrats do nothing wrong ever, ever. This is what he ends up saying. You're going to hell if you criticize the Clinton Foundation. Because, you know, your criticism of the Clinton Foundation is kids shouldn't get charity. Yeah, man, that's the argument we're making. And as actually Joe Scarborough rightly points out, dude, there's a million fucking charities out there. You got to give it to Hillary Clinton. You got to talk to Bill Clinton to get this thing done. Why the fuck do you think they're going to those powerful world leaders? Because it ain't about the charity. Really, the Saudi Arabian government, the government that beheads people for sorcery and witchcraft and drug smuggling, and they say all atheists are terrorists, and they treat women like second-class citizens, and they're not allowed to drive, and they have no rights. Really? That country's like, I really just want to help people, kids all around the world. So naive, or just a liar. You're either ignorant, stupid, or a liar, James Carville. You tell me which one. Here's what all of us are going to do. We're going to fight to get Jill Stein and Gary Johnson in the presidential debates. So let me give you some facts here, and then you'll understand why this is so incredibly important. Now, first of all, did you know only 9% of Americans chose Trump and Hillary to be the party nominees? That's stunning. Only 9%. 91% of the country had nothing to do with the primary. Only 9% chose Trump and Hillary. On that alone, we need more options. You got to get the more options in here. I'm not having a further conversation. That's it. Debate over. I need more options. We need people to have other choices. Really, out of over 300 million people, this is the best we could do. The ultimate establishment insider who barely even pretends anymore to give a shit about the people versus the thin-skinned fascist buffoon who's a man-child and knows nothing about actual policy. Nothing. These are our choices out of over 300 million people. It's ridiculous. So 9% of Americans chose them. Hillary's unfavorables right now, 56%. Understand, these are record unfavorables. So Trump and Hillary are the most disliked nominees in U.S. history. She has 56% unfavorable rating. Donald Trump, 63%. Again, it's hard to wrap your mind around it, just how hated these candidates are. And then finally here, nearly half of Americans want a third-party choice. Nearly half. So, I mean, think about that. 9% voted for Trump and Hillary, that they were involved in picking Trump and Hillary. And 44% say we want a third-party choice. I mean, look, I'm no math genius here, but 44 is a lot more than 9. So what this shows you is Americans just have this burning passion and this desire to have more options, and they're right to have it because this is a sane response to looking at these two losers. So how do we move forward and what do we do? Well, Gary Johnson is the Libertarian candidate. Do I agree with the guy on everything? No. Do I agree with him on a lot of things? Yes. Should he be in the debates? Absolutely. Now, he's already polling in some polls at 10%. Some have him as high as 13%, 14%. I believe he has to get to 15% to get into the debates. Now, I think that rule is bullshit, but nonetheless, it's a rule right now. Well, we're going to try to pressure them to change the rules. It'd be great if he gets to 15% either way. But the bar shouldn't be 15%. The bar should be lower than that. So I'm not saying you let any asshole who decides, I'm going to run for president, and they decide sitting on their couch eating potato chips and they really have no intentions of running for president or attempting to become president or doing any of the stuff. I'm not saying you allow them into the debate. I'm not saying you allow every single person who's, I'm running. But you know who's real? Gary Johnson is real. You know who's real? Jill Stein is real. So who should be allowed in the debates? Gary Johnson and Jill Stein. The Green Party candidate and the Libertarian Party candidate. These are real parties, and these people are serious, and they're raising serious issues. Now, whether or not they can win is a different question, but they're on the ballot in enough states to be taken very seriously. In the case of Gary Johnson, he's on the ballot in all 50 states. So, again, getting them in the debates is a no-brainer. So, first of all, if you're called by a pollster and they ask, who do you support, you better fucking say, even if you support Trump or Hillary, you better fucking say, for the sake of the country, either Jill Stein or Gary Johnson. You better say that. Again, even if you support Trump or Hillary and you love Trump or Hillary, say it, because we deserve to have more voices and more options, and this gives us more voices and more options. So that's step number one. Step number two is we're actually going to get in contact with the people we need to get in contact with and try to force them to change the rules. Now, obviously, I'm not talking about threats, you know. We're liberals. We don't believe in threats. We don't believe in violence. We don't believe in any of that stuff. But what I do believe in is the power of overwhelming numbers. and the power of making people feel like, shit, we don't have an option here. So if you get a big enough wave of people going, dipshit, let them in the debates. Maybe you change something. Maybe you do. So if you want to get Gary Johnson in the debates, and if you want to get Jill Stein in the debates, Jill Stein, by the way, is basically Bernie Sanders but further left. Now, I don't even agree with her on everything. She wants to get rid of nukes. I think that's a little pie in the sky, and I don't think that's possible for human nature reasons. I have some disagreements with her on GMOs and some other things, but that's neither here nor there, because on education policy, she's right. On health care, she's right. On so many issues, war, she's right. That, again, you need that voice to represent an actual progressive position in the debate, whether or not you agree with her on everything. So if you want to get them in the debates, call this number, 202-872-1020, and say, I want Gary Johnson and Jill Stein in the debates. I want them in the debates. The American people deserve to have them in the debates. You know, leave a short message or have a short conversation with a person and just tell them, keep it real. Just be like, look, man, only 9% of the American people voted for Trump or Hillary. Their unfavorables are at record highs. Nearly half the country is open to a third party. Let's get this thing done. This is important. And then also, if you don't want to call because you're shy or whatever the reason may be, you can email. And actually, look, I'm going to go ahead and say you should do both, actually. You should call and email and say the same thing. Okay, let them in the debates, let them in the debates, let them in the debates. This isn't even a reasonable discussion to be having. They deserve to be in the debates. And so to email them, you go to, or you email media@debates.org, media@debates.org. And you can reach Executive Director Janet Brown at jb@debates.org. So media@debates.org goes to general, email address here where I don't know if the team runs it or whatever, but you can reach the Executive Director Janet Brown at jb@debates.org. Look, go nuts, man. Get in contact in every way possible because they need to feel the pressure. They have to know that we're sick of this bullshit. We're sick of this duopoly. We're sick of the two corporate parties running everything. And that's where we're at right now. Both parties are so massively, insanely corrupt. And so you have the choice of, slightly less corruption and more corruption. You have the choice of slightly less war and more war. Where are the people in the debate saying, you know what, no war? Where are the people in the debate saying, no corruption? That's not a thing right now. We can make it a thing if we get Gary Johnson and Jill Stein in the debates, so go for it. Okay. Now we go to Carly Fiorina. Carly Fiorina thinks she's still relevant, so she's giving some speeches around the country, and she has a hilarious new take for us on what makes a progressive.
Now we have, kind of a progressive gaggle right now, right? We have Obama and Sanders and Warren and Clinton, and they're going around talking about how they care so much about people. But here's the truth, and you know it, and we have to make sure that America knows it. You know what progressivism is? You know what it really is? It is the tyranny of the few over the many. That's what progressivism is. It is the concentration of too much power in too few hands.
Yeah. That's what that actually is authoritarianism, but who cares? Political definitions, facts, forget all that shit. So there's a few things I like in there. What's hilarious to me is she lumps in Hillary Clinton with Bernie Sanders. She puts them in the same grouping. Okay, your argument's already done. Like, that's the least true thing anybody's ever said or done. You can't put them in the same category. I mean, you can say, broadly speaking, they're both under the umbrella of the Democratic Party. That's true. So they're both part of the party, the Democrats. But to say that they represent the same ideology is basically like taking a giant dump on the truth. Because clearly Bernie Sanders is an actual liberal. He's an actual progressive. He actually cares about policy substance and issues, And Hillary Clinton, that's all window dressing, and in reality, behind the scenes, she's the ultimate insider, and she's super corrupt, and she partakes in this legalized bribery, and she represents the corporations, and she's an elitist. That's what she is. But with Bernie Sanders, no, he actually cares about the people, and his entire career proves that, and all of his policy positions prove that, and everything he's fought for proves that, so on and so forth. So just the fact that you put Hillary Clinton and Obama in the same category as Bernie Sanders is, I mean, cringe-inducing. So that's point one. Point two is, you want to know what a progressive is? Now, understand something, guys. When I say progressive, I actually use that term interchangeably with liberal. So I know some people have a different interpretation of it, and that's fine. Some people view progressivism as basically authoritarian leftism. I don't view it like that. When I talk about authoritarian leftism, I'll just say authoritarian leftism, or I'll say, you know, social justice warrior, the term that I think is rightly a pejorative, which is people on the left who, for example, obsess about safe spaces and microaggressions, and they want to censor and ban people who say things that are uncomfortable to them and express differing opinions. So that's a real problem, but I just want to be clear that when I use the term progressive, I use it interchangeably with liberal. So going by that understanding of the term progressive, what is a progressive? Well, Carly, progressives are the American people. Let me show you a chart here. This is from Vox. Now, Vox was no fan of Bernie Sanders. No fan. In fact, they kind of openly supported Hillary Clinton. And look at this. They did a poll, found out how the American people feel about Bernie Sanders' agenda, and Americans love it. So first of all, on the broad idea of a political revolution, a very progressive idea, overall, 54% of the American people favor it. 51% of independents favor it. 58% of people who didn't vote in 2012 favor it. 55% of Tea Party supporters favor it. The only group that did not favor it are seniors. So point one here, you want to know what progressivism is? Something the majority of the American people agree with. Now let's get even more specific and honestly to some policy positions here that even more represent the heart of progressivism or liberalism. This is, you know, Bernie Sanders' different specific policy proposals in various areas. So raise taxes on the wealthy. 73% of the American people agree with that. Massively progressive. 66% of people say we should raise taxes on big corporations. Massively progressive. 55% want single-payer health care. Massively progressive. 59% want free college. Massively progressive. By the way, this isn't it. This is just one example, and it happens to compile a lot of the different, you know, progressive policy positions. But you can go into other areas, too, and the American people are clear. You know, raising the minimum wage, 80% of the American people want that. Getting out of the wars overseas. There's one poll that showed only 17% of the American people still want to be in Afghanistan. Massively progressive position to say, let's be more non-interventionist. So, Carly, progressivism is not, yeah, you know, tyranny of the few over the many. That's number one, authoritarianism. Number two, let's face it, your version of conservatism and being a Republican, that's what you're in favor of. Progressivism or liberalism is where most of the American people are when it comes to the important political issues of the day. So, you know, I'm just so sick of these know-nothing jackasses like Carly Fiorina who pretend to know shit. I mean, she was Ted Cruz's VP for all of 23 seconds, and now she's out there lecturing people about control of the few over the many. Carly, Ted Cruz fought to try to ban dildos in Texas. I'm not kidding about that. That's real. We covered the story. So again, you have the nerve to talk about control of the few over the many when you were the VP for somebody who wanted to ban dildos. How ridiculous are you? So spare me, spare me, spare me. You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know political definitions. All you're doing is smearing leftists. And yes, you can say that Hillary Clinton is part of this corrupt elite establishment. I agree with you, but so are you. And no, Bernie can't be put in the same category as Obama or Hillary Clinton. And no, progressivism is not this caricature that you've made of it in your mind. You know, you're the one who's actually in bed and in the camp with a bunch of losers who really do want to control every aspect of your social life while they rob money from you and give it to the rich. Okay. Okay, let's go to the Irish Times. They have an amazing story here about Syria. The Irish Times is reporting on a stunning new development in Syria. They explain here, China, Russia, and Iran have come together in a tripartite alliance supporting the Syrian government in the war against radical fundamentalist insurgents. The main targets of this alliance are ISIS and Jabhat Fatah al-Sham, formerly al-Qaeda's affiliate Jabhat al-Nusra. Until last week, Russia and Iran were the military mainstays of the overstretched and undermanned Syrian army. China offered to train Syrian military personnel and provide humanitarian aid, while Chinese advisors are routinely deployed to teach Syrian soldiers how to use Chinese weapons. The proposal to have advisors on a regular basis amounts to direct engagement in the conflict on the government side. Moscow, Tehran, and Beijing fear the fall of secular Damascus would lead to the establishment of jihadi fiefdoms in Syria, from which radicals would mount attacks into southern Russia and Iran and promote Muslim dissidents in China. Okay, so this is really interesting, and as many other commentators have rightly pointed out, at what point does this become a world war? Just curious. Because you have Russia, Iran, and China on one side of it. On the other side of it, on the side of the rebels, you have, you know, Saudi Arabia, the Gulf states, the United States. You know, perhaps you throw Israel in there as well. They've voiced more support for rebels than the Assad regime and the Syrian government. So at what point is this like, whoa, pump your brakes, pump your brakes. We got a real issue here. And this, the dividing lines are clear and not good. Not good at all. And, you know, when you dig deeper, you find out this is a broader split as well between the battle Sunni versus Shia, where, again, you have Saudi Arabia on one side and Turkey on one side representing the rebels, and you have Iran and obviously the Syrian government on the other side that represent the Shias more so. So it's weird, and it's getting creepy and tricky, and this isn't just about the ethnic issue and the religious issue, although that's a big part of it, but it also has a lot to do with, you know, the global chessboard of power, and it has a lot to do with competing business interests and controlling vital regions in the Middle East. And this is why Russia's involved, and this is why the U.S. is involved. Now China's getting involved, and obviously China has been aligned with the Syrian government for a very long time now. So the fact that they're getting involved and they're actually helping on the ground when they weren't before, it shows that it's heating up. Now, what I would warn the U.S. to do is don't fall to the trap. Don't do it. Don't do it. Because if the U.S. response to this is to, you know, increase aid to the rebels, well, look, we've already shown that we don't know who the fuck we're arming. We armed one set of rebels, and they went into Syria and immediately gave all their weapons over to the al-Qaeda affiliate in there. So look at that. You fucked up and armed jihadists and Islamists. So don't fall into the trap by doubling down on, you know, staying on the rebel side, because, number one, you're going to arm the wrong people, as we've shown, and number two, you're going to escalate needlessly. Because I actually believe it when China and Russia say, we don't want to have, you know, we don't want Assad to fall and then basically Syria to become Al-Qaeda-stan. So I believe them when they say that, that that's their main concern. I mean, again, obviously you have a power struggle too, a broader power struggle in the global chessboard as well. But that's a real goal and one we should all be concerned about. And the number one enemy of everybody should be ISIS and Al-Qaeda. So when they step in, when China steps in and says, you know what, anybody but ISIS and Al-Qaeda, that's a reasonable position. With Russia saying that, that's a reasonable position. When the U.S. goes, yeah, no, we just want to be aligned against you by default because you're our bigger regional enemies and we still have this Cold War mentality, no, you're falling into the trap and you're making a big mistake. You're making a mistake, honestly, that's almost exactly like the mistake of Ronald Reagan arming the Mujahideen, because the Mujahideen at the time was fighting the big, bad, godless Soviet Union. So we armed the Mujahideen. Later on, they became Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and they fought us with our own weapons. You're going to make the same mistake in Syria. To an extent, you've already made it, but don't make it even more so than you have. In other words, I'm actually with the camp that says maybe we all sit down at the table with Russia and the Syrian government and China, and we can work towards a diplomatic end. We can negotiate something out here. But also, most importantly, we all get on the same page and acknowledge, okay, the biggest threat here are the jihadists, right? So that can be done if we're just reasonable and if we just use our minds instead of immediately going into the, you know, reactionary, knee-jerk reaction of, no, I'm against China and Russia by definition. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. So there is an opportunity here to sit down, negotiate a deal with these players, and, you know, you can get Saudi Arabia and Turkey involved too and let them know we're not going to arm these unsavory rebels anymore. And hopefully you find a way to not necessarily do joint military exercises with them, but just hold it on the same page and say, okay, jihadists are the enemy, and to do our best to limit, you know, civilian casualties across the board. If we can sit down and do something like that, it would be much better than just going back into your corner here, doubling down on rebel support, and making the war even worse and escalating towards World War III. So you got to be smart here. You know, you can't be stupid, and you can't revert to the Cold War mentality. And I don't know if I have the faith in Washington to go down that road, because we've already shown how silly they are on so many other fronts. Like, for example, Petraeus floating to Obama in a meeting. How about we arm Al-Qaeda to fight Assad and to fight ISIS? Really? This is how up your own ass you've gone? Fighting, arming Al-Qaeda is a good idea. We can't have thinkers like that in positions of power, because that's almost guaranteeing an escalation to a world war. Okay. Okay, let's go to Bill Nye. There's been some absolutely horrific flooding in Louisiana recently. 13 people are dead. Tens of thousands of houses are ruined. People's lives have just been upended and destroyed. And they say that this is the worst natural disaster in the U.S. since Hurricane Katrina. So this is really, really, really serious. And it's just not getting as much coverage because it's not, you know, it doesn't have the initial shock that a hurricane would have because it's flooding. So it's really disastrous, and Bill Nye went on CNN here to talk about it. Let's see what he had to say.
We know what they're dealing with down there. We see it time and again. Reporters such as myself have stood in those waters and watched these people rebuild. Can anything be done?
Well, for us, on my side of this is a result of climate change.
Right.
It's only going to get worse.
Right.
We hear this all the time. But isn't there not just about temperature, not just about erosion and water, but the basic structure of this place, how New Orleans, from the weight of development and how it's been built up, the levees is sinking. That when you're there, you stand on the ground and you look up at ships going past you in the Mississippi.
So I don't have the answer to this, except it's going to get worse. Almost certainly will get worse. Everybody, as the ocean gets warmer, which it is getting, it expands. Water gets, the molecules spread apart. And then as the sea surface is warmer, more water evaporates. And so it's very reasonable that these storms are connected to these big effects. So what will probably happen is people will move.
Mm-hmm.
Bunch of civil engineers who have done an analysis that you could power the United States, you could power most of the world renewably if you just decided to do it right now. You could. There's enough wind and solar resources, a little bit of tidal, some geothermal, to run the whole place. And then you would not, the previous story, just heartbreaking. You would not need to have a military on the other side of the world protecting oil fields. People would not be as motivated to set oil fields fire
if we had renewable electricity here.
A big issue that we see
in the first world, or the
West. We see hanging it over lots of parts of life. Let's see what happens coming
and,
out of
this. You know, here at CNN, you have essentially a climate change denier meteorologist, and knock yourselves out, but this is a big problem, and it's not going to go away.
A bigger conversation for another day. Bill Nye, appreciate it.
You're criticizing us? Gotta go. Thanks for coming, Bill Nye. Appreciate it. That's so sad. So he makes some great points there. The wars in the Middle East point is always really interesting because he's saying you wouldn't need this Western presence in the Middle East to the extent we have it if we were totally using renewable technology, green technology. And he even goes on to say, dude, we can switch to it right now. I didn't even know that. They're saying, yeah, if you just put the effort forward. But, I mean, I guess it makes sense because what's holding us back? The oil industry lobbyists, the fact that, you know, the oil industry has all this money and they spend a lot of money lobbying governments to try to make sure we don't get off the oil because then they go out of business and they don't want that. Yeah, but the downside of you staying in business is we continue to destroy the planet, climate change gets worse, and we march down this road to Armageddon. I don't want to overstate it here, but that's basically what's happening. So he's pointing out, dude, we can go to renewable right now. We just have to, you know, muster up the will to do it, and I would argue get the money out of politics to allow us to do it. And perhaps the overarching point for this all is, he says, this is climate change, so let's acknowledge that, but furthermore, stop debating it. Here on CNN, you have essentially a climate-denying meteorologist, and they do have these debates over it all the time. And he's like, come on, man. He's calling out CNN to CNN's face. You got to wake up here, and you got to grow up, and you got to do the right thing and do your job. And the problem is, as we've discussed before, CNN has the wrong view of what journalism is. In their mind, they think neutrality is the way to go. Because what is neutrality? Neutrality means you're super balanced, and you're so balanced to the point of almost forcing balance on the situation, where everything is 50-50. Whatever the Democrats say, I'm going to tell you what they say. Whatever the Republicans say, I'm going to tell you what they say. We're going to look at every side of everything. Now, people might think, well, that seems like a fair and good way to approach these things. But hold on now. What about when reality is not indeed 50-50? What about when it's 100% one side is right and the other side is wrong? What about that? Well, then it's hard for them to come out and say they're right, they're wrong, because they've already bought into this narrative of equivalence is always the way to go. But sometimes you have a false equivalence. This is one of them. Did you know that Bill Nye debated Marsha Blackburn recently? Marsha Blackburn, a Republican congresswoman. They had a debate about whether or not climate change is real. So Bill Nye, the science guy, versus know-nothing Marsha Blackburn, who's taking money from big oil, and they go back and forth as to whether or not the, you know, climate change is real. You're doing a disservice to journalism. That's a slap in the face to journalism there. You want to know why? Because you're being neutral instead of being objective. Objective means you tell the truth no matter what. Neutral means I'm always going to call it 50-50. Well, you should marry yourself to objectivity and not neutrality, and then you would be sounding the alarms. You know, people say, oh my God, you're doing scare tactics. Sometimes scare tactics are necessary when the thing in question is scary. I love how people use terms they don't even understand what they're saying. Like, oh, scare tactics. Yeah, some things are scary. So therefore, in those instances, scare tactics are merited. In fact, that's the only accurate and objective way to cover certain things. Climate change is one of them. You know, the coverage during fucking Nazi Germany taking over swaths of Europe. You should have used scare tactics because it's fucking scary. Call me crazy. So, Bill Nye wrecked shit and ran shit in there, and they gotta take his advice, man, and they gotta stop doing this bullshit false equivalence, and they have to really cover climate change seriously, and no more hedging, no more any of that stuff. All the evidence and the data is in one direction. You gotta talk about it endlessly, raise the public consciousness and awareness, and then put enough pressure on the government to change things. Okay. All right, here we go. Now we go to Fox News and the sex scandal, which is continuing. So at least 20 women have accused Roger Ailes, the former CEO of Fox News, of sexual harassment. Some claims are even more robust than that. I mean, we don't need to go into the details here. We've gone into them previously. But he's a bad dude, man. And he did classic sexual harassment where, you know, he would let these female anchors know, you want to get ahead? Maybe you do this. You know, maybe we have a sexual relationship. You and I should have had a sexual relationship a long time ago, as he said to one of the anchors. I believe that was Gretchen Carlson. So you do X, I'll give you Y is a classic sexual harassment for somebody in a position of power and who controls your destiny, has your destiny in their hands. Like, this is your boss, this fucking creep who's always asking for sexual favors. That's unacceptable. Well, yesterday, former Fox host Andrea Tantaros filed a lawsuit against the network, and she has some really, really harsh words for them. So she says she was fired specifically for complaining about being sexually harassed, and then she goes on to say this, quote, Fox News masquerades as a defender of traditional family values, but behind the scenes it operates like a sex-fueled Playboy Mansion-like cult, steeped in intimidation, indecency, and misogyny. Damn, son. Now, everybody needs to understand, Andrea Tantaros was one of their furthest right-wing hosts. If I, you know, played for you a compilation of all the things she said, you'd say, this may be the furthest right-wing female on the planet. I'm serious. She's really, really right-wing. And she's coming out and saying this. And there's also, like, Bill O'Reilly is implicated in her allegations, and she details that here's what he did to me and when he did it to me and so on and so forth. Roger Ailes, same thing. You know, again, there are over 20 accusers now. It was this boys' club where it was, you know, a situation of you want to get ahead, you do this and that. So it's as bad as it gets, and now it appears like Fox News is finally being exposed. And you want to know how you know this is as serious as it gets? She turned down a seven-figure settlement. They offered her seven figures. She's like, yeah, no. I want consequences. I want justice. We covered the story not that long ago. They have tapes of Roger Ailes doing the sexual harassment. They're in trouble. They're in trouble. And that's why a lot of these different accusers are like, yeah, settlement, my ass cheeks. No. We have you on tape. Empire is crumbling. And it'll be interesting to see what happens moving forward here. They're trying to get the women into arbitration, which is private, you know, like a private court within the company, which isn't really like a court at all. And the women are like, no, we want to go through the justice system. And this is where we're at right now, man. So even Andrea Tantaros is like, I got some stories for you. So we'll see what happens moving forward. But it looks like an absolute disaster. Okay. All right. Let me go to Alex Jones here. Oh, what a great story this is. Alex Jones and his cronies are going to have pretty much the craziest conversation you've ever heard in your life. Check it out.
You're seeing the fullest implementation, Alex, of the complete destruction from within. Everybody who's in, you know, let's call him the Lord of the Flies, the Lord of the Flies administration, is bent on...
Ooh, that's a good name for it.
Yeah, let's use that, you know. Because you asked me the question, and let me share this too. When you when you're in the world of evil spirits and true biblical deliverance, the evil spirits that come out always have, seriously, a smell of sulfur, and it's fascinating, or a smell of feces. Let's just be blunt. So what I find is fascinating that in so many instances of Bohemian Grove, you're told what the people do. All this stuff, it's centered around that which...
Oh, I was asking earlier, in Skull and Bones, they're worshiping angels. They believe we're getting...
Fallen angels.
Fallen angels. They believe angels, eulogia, goddesses, but they do it in big pools of feces.
Global elite, besides being Luciferians, besides being some of the most horrific entities on Earth. When I use the word entity, by the way, Alex, I mean something that's not human, okay? I want to make that clear. Or someone who has submitted their humanity to total demon possession.
Why do you think Obama always has little flies landing on him?
Well, can I tell you something? Michelle Obama, and you should have your guys look this up, was talking about his odor, okay? Now, I'll tell you why. Beelzebub in the New Testament means Lord of the Flies, okay? Lord of the Flies. So Beelzebub is another name for who? Satan.
Well, and I mean, it's amazing, though. Almost everywhere he goes, there's just flies all over the place. Well, and the media makes a joke out of that. It's true.
They just argued President Obama is Satan. I think I'm at a loss for words. That never happens, but today I'm at a loss for words. How can you be that ridiculous? I mean, Alex Jones has a million and one problems, but this is on another level. He's gone so deep into the cesspool of conspiracy theories that now he's just out on the other end of being a religious fundamentalist. Obama's saying, well, explain to me why there are always flies on him then. Why are there flies? I see the flies. Flies are always there. You know, people talk about the way he smells. They say, you know, when they were skull and bones, when they were doing their things, they worship angels in big pools of feces. That's what happened. He speaks about all these things like it's so, you know, like he's just having a conversation about what he ate for lunch or something. Well, yeah, the global elites, they worship angels in big pools of feces, and that's what happens. Okay, you children, there's no evidence Satan is even real. There's no evidence Satan is a thing. Never mind the fact that President Obama is Satan. What do you think happens? Like, seriously, so there's a big red guy who lives in the sky, and he's got the horns. And he's really muscular, like all the fucking portrayals of Satan are. He's got the tail, and he's got a pitchfork. You're like, ha, 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 ha. I will cause havoc on the planet. How will I do that? By putting flies around the President of the United States. You know, Satan, right? Satan, oh, supernatural, oh, the king of all evil. He can do anything. So what does he choose to do? Put some flies around the President of the United States.
I will make the President of the United States smell bad.
That's the evilest person on the planet. Not even a person. Literally Satan, the devil. That's as evil as it gets. You know, if the devil wanted to be the devil, he could do some devil shit. Like, for example, I don't know. I'm going to blow up the world right now. That's some more devilish shit. Or he could just come out one day, make himself visible to everybody on the planet, and do his fucking routine.
You're all gonna die in a pit of hell where you'll burn eternally.
But no, to these morons, number one, the devil exists. Number two, the devil is Obama. Number three, this is how the devil, drops hints. He always just drops hints. It's never like, I'm gonna let everybody know what's up. I'm just going to drop hints. Flies. We're going with flies, guys. The original plan was mongooses. We put a mongoose here and there and make them look kind of creepy, and that was the plan. We moved away. Okay, we're away from the mongoose one, guys. We're going to flies. We're going to do the fly one. And why, like, it's really also narcissism, too, because they think, like, well, our president is the one that's engaged in this cosmic battle, and we have the devil as our president. Okay, why not the president of, I don't know, Burundi? Why not that president? Why not some jackasses in Saudi Arabia? I mean, they're a pretty fucked up government. They do way worse things than Obama does. Why not them? No, because these are children, man, and they want to believe in this very simplistic view of the world. There's good and there's evil. And obviously me, Alex Jones, and everybody else around me, all my buddies here, we're on the side of good, and we're on the side of the angels, and we don't want to worship demons in pools of feces, and we acknowledge that Obama is Satan. I mean, this is like really next-level grotesque, stupid shit. Like, it's one thing to say, look, I disagree with the guy on policy, here's why, and even you can say he's horrendous on policy, and here's why. And I don't even have to agree with you, but you can make the arguments. when you go as far as to say those political leaders I dislike are literally demonic or they are Satan, well, then, you know, you lose what little credibility you had left. And the hilarious thing is these guys really take themselves so seriously. They think they're the only people. They're onto something. I'm Alex Jones, Infowars.com. We're the truth tellers, and part of our truth telling is letting you know that you have the elites worshiping in feces pools, and you got to let know that they're devils and they're demons, even though there's no proof that devils and demons exist, and that's not a thing. That's a thing that children believe in and whatnot, and uneducated folk, but you know what? We believe in it, and that's Obama is that, and Infowars.com, Alex Jones, Prison Planet, understand that they're coming to get you. Buy my supplements, by the way. Have you tried my supplements? I'm not a con artist. I'm not a scam artist. I got some supplements, though, you should try. It'll make your dick grow super big, and you'll love it very much. Okay. I'm out of time, guys. I love you. We'll see you tomorrow. Same time, same place. Another hour show, just for the record. Rest of the week here. Hour-long shows. Mwah! I'm out. Peace.